Hey everybody, my name is Mike Gibb. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I'm excited to be moderating today's webinar on the most important metrics that collection agencies should be monitoring on a regular basis. Collection agencies can be fountains of data, but a lot of it is white noise and not really crucial to the success or failure of a business. Today, we've got a panel of experts from across the credit collection industry who are going to share their insights into the metrics and data points that collection agencies should be keeping an eye on to help their businesses grow and succeed. This webinar is being generously sponsored by TCN. You'll get the chance to hear about them a little later in our program. I want to take a quick second and say a few words about AccountsRecovery.net. AccountsRecovery.net is a news and information platform for the ARM industry. The site publishes unique and curated content, maintains a number of email newsletters, hosts a lot of webinars like this one, and offers a number of exciting podcasts for the ARM industry, including one that I just launched last week, which is a deep dive into the CFPB's proposed debt collection rule. You check that out. The site is free for anyone in the industry to use. It's a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform. I hope everyone will spend a couple minutes every day checking out what it's got to offer. Now, let me tell you a little bit about today's speakers. LaDonna Bowling is a Chief Compliance Officer at Contract Callers in Augusta, Georgia. She's got decades of experience in first and third party collections, focusing on utilities, telecom, and medical. She's very active with the Georgia Collectors Association, a member of Inside ARM's Compliance Professionals Forum, and is a certified instructor for ACA International. She also holds the Credit and Collection Compliance Officer designation, as well as the International Fellowship of Certified Collection Executives designation. LaDonna was also the 2016 recipient of the ACA International's Kurt Swirsky Award for Outstanding Leader in the Credit and Collection Industry. Mike DiCarpio is the Director of Collections at BCA Financial Services. With more than 25 years of experience in the ARM industry, Mike joined BCA Financial Services in 2018. His core focus has been staff development and motivation, and the paramount piece to that has been identifying the right people up front. Mike wrote, he does a terrible job of describing himself in writing bios, so don't be like Mike. Michael Loggis is the President and Chief Financial Officer at Delta Outsource Group. Michael spent more than two decades in collections and management roles and is responsible for all billing, collections, and accounting functions for Delta. He has also managed credit and collection staff in multiple locations and has managed portfolios of $500 million. He has also achieved a Lean Six Sigma Green Belt certification. Thanks to all our panelists for joining us today. The format for today's webinar will be a panel discussion. We encourage everybody to submit questions and we'll get to them either as the discussion is ongoing or when the discussion has concluded. To submit a question, please enter it into the question tab on your Zoom webinar control panel. This event is being recorded and a recording will be made available later today on AccountsRecovery.net webinar recordings page. Finally, I just want to take a quick second and ask everybody to fill out the survey. That should pop up on your screen when today's webinar is over. You'll also receive an email tomorrow with a link to access the survey. Participating in the survey helps me develop content that is what you're looking for and make sure the speakers for these events are the people you want to hear from. Would really appreciate your insights if you're willing to share them. With that, let's begin our discussion and let me go around the panel and ask, what do you think are the three most important metrics that collection agencies should be tracking, and how often should collection agencies be keeping an eye on those particular figures? LaDonna, why don't you go first?
Well, thank you, Michael. I think a lot of times we do break it down into little silos, but holistically, it's people, process, and technology. And then under each one of those, you know, there's different KPIs that goes along with that. And I think that DiCarpio probably agrees with me.
Actually, I think he's having some audio problems, so I'm trying to fix that. Michael, why don't you follow up on LaDonna's answer?
Yeah, I would agree with her on that one. People, processes. I mean, the primary ones we focus on, to be a little bit more specific initially, is what I consider the 101s. You know, attempts, right party contacts, and conversion rate. And then also per employee, per day kind of a thing. I mean, there's so many metrics that you can go after. You know, you can dig yourself into a hole and never get out of if you're not careful. But I would agree with her on people, process, and forgot the last one, technology.
Yeah. So. You notice he said he'll agree with me on that one. But what about the best times to call? Because, you know, historically, you know, I think as agencies, you know, we always thought we had to work till, you know, 8 or 9 o'clock at night to make those right party contacts. We worked on Saturdays to make those right party contacts. You know, are you guys tracking your RPCs after hours now and on Saturdays and making any changes in those?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Yes, we are. And one of the things we actually signed up on a pilot program with a company to provide us with, quote, best times based on historical data that we provided them. And what we discovered was 80% of our accounts had a best time between 8 and 10 a.m. Consumer time. And there was no way I was going to be able to get through my entire portfolio or 80% of it in 2 hours every day. But yeah, the issue with the late nights and Saturdays is we have certain clients, even though we've shown them these KPIs, they just simply will not allow us via their SLAs to eliminate Saturdays or reduce late nights.
Yeah. And I find the same issue trying to educate clients, you know, and get them into today's, you know, technological world and say, you know, people have their communication with them, you know, 24/7 now. And I'd much rather have my people here because I know historically on some polls it showed that, you know, best RPCs were on Mondays between 8 and 11 and just kind of followed that path Mondays and Tuesdays and Thursdays, and Wednesdays were always woeful.
Yep.
Mike DiCarpio, are you back?
Yeah, I'm sorry about that, guys.
That's okay. Awesome. first question to you is, what do you think are the three most important metrics a collection agency should be tracking?
So I think that they should be aligned with whatever your strategic goals are, either for the quarter, for the month, for the year. So the things that you should be tracking are the things that move you towards objections or the objectives of those goals that you have. You know, I know that there's always the standard answers that everyone has, such as daily cash, you know, client recovery percentages. But I think that you should stay focused on the goals that you set for your organization.
Do you break it down with, you know, operational metrics? You know, because if you look at it, you know, you break it down to people, process, and technologies, and then there's operational metrics where we're looking more at RPCs, cost of contact, agent utilization. And then, you know, there's business effectiveness, which, you know, that's looking at it from an external focus and focusing heavily on the P&L and, you know, the revenue. So how do you bring these two together?
Well, you know, and I think that's where your objectives come from. You know, where I'm at right now, one of our big objectives is retention. And so the better that we can retain our staff, and this is, I'm not going to say anything that nobody already knows, but the more you retain our staffs, then the better our situations are, because then we can hit RPCs, we can actually hit the rest of those metrics, and they tie together by keeping the staff that you got. So, you know, what are we doing to track retention in terms of improving it over where we've been or where we want to be? And then I think the same thing holds true with the RPCs. So what impacts RPCs, not necessarily the RPC themselves, but what are the other things that you're trying to accomplish that's going to have that impact? And then those are the things that I want to track in terms of the top three that I have, not necessarily the RPC itself, but the things that influence it.
Interesting. Because I was looking at employee satisfaction as well, is sometimes a metric that we overlook because we're so caught up in, you know, right party contacts, average handle time, you know, not ready time and all those things. And, you know, we're overlooking the employees and, you know, how satisfied are they with what they're doing?
Yeah, and that's such a hard one to do too. Employee satisfaction is very difficult to measure because it's so variant. So it's a tough, and by gosh, if you guys have figured that one out, let me know because I'm looking for that now.
Well, I was hoping to get the answer from you guys today.
Yeah. I'm curious, Mike DiCarpio. You know, I think you're spot on when you talk about how the you know, what you're tracking should align with your strategic goals. Do you have a couple or maybe at least one example you can share about how that, you know, how that should sort of look within a collection agency?
So don't put me on the spot or anything, will you?
No, not at all.
Yeah, no. So, you know, I mentioned retention a second ago. Retention is a big thing for us because, you know, we as an organization, we were not happy with our 2018 retention. And we have two locations, and one is tracking pretty good with where we want to be, where the other location's not. So then we have to break down those metrics in there. So is it based off the hiring? Are we hiring the right people? Are we handling them the right way? Are they trained and they're coached in the same fashion? So what we want to do is track the progression of the employee. You know, when are we losing them? At what points in time? What's the, you know, what's the average tenure of the people that are leaving? And so, I mean, these are just some of the things that we're kind of tracking as it turns, as it relates to the retention piece of it. I hope I answered your question.
No, yeah, you're good. I appreciate it. Let's sort of flip the conversation a little bit. Are there metrics that are often overlooked that, you know, as being more important than they truly are? I'm curious if anybody has any sort of hidden gems in terms of the metrics that maybe some other agencies or other executives aren't looking at, but maybe should be. Michael Lagos, your turn.
Wow. You know, that's a tough question. I don't know if they're most agency executives that I've dealt with probably look at too much. One of the ones that we are looking into this year is what we consider first contact yield. So, you know, because your costs are so much lower if you can secure funds on that first contact. So I don't know how many others are looking at that, but that's one that I think is valuable from a cost perspective. You know, and if you can increase that, then you're not only collecting more, but you're spending less doing it.
Yes, and I think tracking letter effectiveness is also a good way to look at, you know, cutting down on cost. You know, and this goes back to educating your clients. We have some clients who are, you know, contracts say you must letter on receipt. And, you know, we try to prove that, well, really, you know, we make more money, you know, the other way, and, you know, our recovery doesn't go down. But, you know, I think that's an area that needs to be focused on as well. You know, it's how effective are your letters, and then how effective is your skip tracing? Because we spend a lot of money with waterfalls and scores and numbers, and I'm trying to think of a good way to measure that, to see, you know, are we getting back what we're putting in? Is there a return on our investment? And if y'all have some tips on that, I'd certainly welcome them.
Everyone's jumping to help LaDonna.
I mean, you know, that we're all having conversation with clients to try to reduce costs and get them to understand effectiveness. I think from the conversations that I've had with many clients, there's an internal battle going on between their operations and their compliance teams. And what their expectations are, and oh, the letter has to go out, and then you get into an argument with, you know, the clients, or not an argument or discussion with their general counsel about why, you know, a letter is only required upon contact, and so I think you're not only are you having that conversation with your client, but there's their own internal debate going on that you may not be a part of.
Understood.
Excellent. Well, we have a question that's coming from the audience, but I'm going to ask it now, if only just to take care of it, but also to remind everybody, if you have a question for one or all of our panelists, please enter it into the your Q&A tab on the Zoom webinar control panel, and we'll try and get to it before the end of the discussion today. The question is, are there any significant changes in metrics that are more or less important now, given the proliferation of online self-servicing, I guess people who are making payments via web portals?
And
has that affected
very,
these?
Well, that's a good question because, you know, we're just now branching out into different, you know, communication channels with, you know, an app, a mobile app, codes on our letters so they can take them to the mobile app. And we're noticing a lot of traffic going through here, but we don't have enough data to where we can give any numbers to, you know, say that it's valuable or we need to track this more. But I will add from a compliance perspective, the more communication channels you open up, the more, you know, opportunities you have to overlook, you know, requests from a consumer. So I just had to throw that in there. Sorry.
No, that would completely say, fine.
Yeah, from my perspective, to piggyback on what she's saying, I mean, the use of technology and email and text messaging and going to the website and, you know, we've had a couple of conversations with vendors that offer the online negotiator and stuff. I think the CFPB and finalizing those rules is really going to help that area and help agencies understand how we can effectively use those mediums to impact performance.
Yeah, I tend to agree with both of these guys as well. Multi-channel communication is going to be, it's going to be extremely important. And it actually ties into the last two subjects together because, quite frankly, the biggest expense that we all have is resource and labor. And being able to utilize multi-channel communications to possibly maneuver some of the standard communications away from telephonic dependency is going to be important as we move forward and progress. It's going to cut our labor costs, and it's also going to increase our RPCs in a different platform.
Yeah. Although one trend we have noticed is a lot of traffic goes to our mobile app, you know, after 11 o'clock at night. So I guess.
Yeah, don't show your clients that. You'll be working until 11 o'clock at night.
Good point. Good point. That wasn't LaDonna that said that. That was someone else.
Yeah. Unfortunately, there's only one LaDonna and three mics on the call, so it's all good.
Yeah.
LaDonna can start calling herself Mike, too, and maybe confuse everybody.
Yeah, just call me Mike. We'll be good.
All right. At this point, I just want to pause the discussion briefly, and I'd like to invite Kurt Hansen from TCN, the sponsor of today's webinar, to say a few words. Kurt?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Mike, for allowing us to be here and the rest of the panel as well. You know, TCN's, we love to be a part of these. We're very committed to the accounts receivable and collections industry is not only in developing technology and providing solutions, but also in, you know, petitioning our industry leaders and elected officials for better TCPA regulations. So just quick intro of who TCN is and what we do. TCN, we are a leading provider of cloud-based call center technology for enterprises, contact centers, BPOs, as well as collection agencies worldwide. At TCN, we combine a deep understanding of the needs of the collection users as well and couple that with a highly affordable delivery model. By doing this, we ensure immediate access to robust call center technology, all the expected things such as SMS, email, predictive dialer, IVR, call recording, as well as we have a very powerful built-in business intelligence and business analytics and other compliance tools that help operations while adhering, you know, callers' requests and TCPA. TCN, we have over 2,000 customers, and we serve various Fortune 500 companies and enterprises in a multitude of industries, including the collection space, of course, as well as education, healthcare, automotive, political, customer service, as well as others. I would like to call out attention to one recent release that we've put out, and that is with our new compliance suite platform. And that now includes natural language compliance, which is an industry first. TCN's platform, we don't just safeguard call center compliance against the TCPA. It's designed also to help automate compliance and minimize risk as regulations and rules come and go. Features like natural language compliance and manually approved calling, we can help users control when and how they contact and when communications happen. So that's a pretty exciting thing that we've been able to roll out recently with the natural language compliance. But if you do want more information, please visit us at TCN.com or follow us on Twitter at TCN. That's, again, thank you for letting us be here.
Awesome, Kurt. Well, thank you for your remarks, and thanks again to TCN for sponsoring today's webinar. I'm sure I speak for all of us when I say we appreciate your generous support. Now, picking up our discussion where we left off, we've talked about a lot of different data points. I'm sure we're going to talk about a lot more through the rest of this discussion. I'm curious, what are the best ways for agencies to keep tabs on those different figures? I mean, are those data points that the software they're using should be able to generate, or is it more sort of manual processes that they're going to have to go in and dig some of these data points out? You know, what are some of the best practices in terms of actually getting hands on the numbers? Mike DiCarpio, would you mind going first?
No. So, you know, all of our software packages have reports that are pre-canned that are available to us. And they do provide us some of the information that we need. Unfortunately, to get down to the deeper problems, you have to be able to extract that data, whether it be through some type of reporting that you have or dashboarding that you create within, the framework. And, you know, you have to dig down and you have to massage the data to get out what you need from it.
So what kind of reports do you guys look at, you know, besides your canned reports that show you, you know, your strategies, I mean, or your results from your dialing? And so what kind of reports do you get, or do you customize?
So, you know, I'm sorry, was somebody else going to say something?
No, go ahead.
All right. So, you know, I mean, we all pretty much get the same reports. We all have a dial-in system that we always extract that data from, whether we're looking at abandon rates, call volumes, connects, outbound calls, connects to those, and what we missed, what opportunities were dropped from there. And then, you know, we're always looking at daily cash as a daily number that we're looking at. So, I mean, these are standard first thing in the morning before my eyes open, and I'm looking at these reports to see what we're doing. And then from there, it depends on where the journey takes us that day. What's the biggest issue of the day, and what are we tracking in terms of strategic planning, or whether or not we have a client need that requires us to deviate from a normal day, because there are no normal days.
Yeah. Does anybody here belong to a benchmarking group? I mean, so how do we know that what we're measuring is the norm or the average? And, you know, we're always going to have it, you know, to our certain business model, but you kind of sometimes like to have a feeling that what you're doing is normal and the results you're getting are normal. And how are we measuring ourselves?
Well, I'm not aware of outside of ACA of any kind of benchmarking. And I think part of the issue you run into that is, you know, medical collections versus financial services versus, you know, other types of business, it's all going to vary. You know, as far as reports, I mean, yeah, we have the standard canned ones that come with the software packages, and then we have our own internal stuff that we put together as kind of a monthly summary, which we've been tracking for years. And we tend to benchmark ourselves against prior performance, either prior month, prior year. It just really depends on the metric, but, you know, if anybody knows of a benchmarking group that we can get some decent numbers out of, I would be all game for that.
Yeah.
I'll also just add that all of us are in a competitive environment where we're competing head to head with other organizations. So that's part of the benchmarking, as well as how you're performing in comparison to the competition for the same portfolio.
Yeah. You know, we get on those champion challenger situations and scorecards, and you know, it's usually neck and neck. So a lot of times you can tell, okay, well, they might be doing some of the same things we're doing. But, you know, I've seen some operations where they throw every resource they have just to be number one on a scorecard. And I know from a business perspective, you know, that's not going to yield, you know, what's not going to do your bottom line. So, you know, I think it's important that we all know what we're throwing at these things to be number one on the scorecard.
I'm curious, Mike DiCarpio, going back to something you were talking about with regards to the reports you read before you open your eyes, do you have a routine? Are there certain reports you have to look at every day, you know, or, you know, just sort of everything, you know, the day just doesn't feel right?
Well, I always want to know what my abandons were the day before. So I always look at that report first, and then I always want to look at what cash is. So those are standards for me. What did we do yesterday in terms of cash? Is it in line? Is it consistent with where it should be? And then abandon rates, or are we servicing our clients in an appropriate manner? We're 100% healthcare, so we service the healthcare industry. So those things are very important to our partners.
Yeah.
Well, I also think that when you're talking KPIs and you're looking at these reports and stuff, I guess the question you got to ask yourself when you're looking at any KPI is, what is it driving, right? What if it changes, what are you going to change? Or if you can't answer those questions, then you have to question why you're even tracking it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So if you're not doing a gap analysis, then, you know, it's pointless. You know, like with postdates every month, you know, we like to see an increase in postdates. Well, why? And what does that mean? And what cost are we increasing our postdates?
Right.
I guess that's the second part of the data. If you're looking at a data point and you see something, you know, what do you do then? You know, is there do you sort of just kind of keep an eye on it for a couple of days? Like if it's a daily thing, like the cash you were talking about, the cash report, if it's a daily thing, do you sort of wait a couple of days before you make any changes? Or, you know, how quickly do you react to something you see, you know, when you're looking at these metrics that you're keeping a close eye on?
Well, it's like everyone else's world. You get to know what the rhythms are within the information that's there. You don't want to be reactive. That's the worst thing that we can all do, is be reactive to any indicator. But what we have to do is analyze and figure out why it's happening, and figure out, you know, I think Mike Loggins just hit on it. You know, you have to know what is pushing the needle on certain things, in which direction it's pushing it, and why. And that's where you actually go through and utilize the rest of the KPI that we have available. There's so much information that we all have that it can be paralysis by analysis, because you're just looking at too much. I used to work with a guy years ago that his favorite quote was, if you're looking at everything, you're not looking at anything. And so you have to know which, you know, did you have attendance issues? Were you having other issues that may lead to a lower cash day? And when did those things take impact? Or did you miss some files? Is there IT issues that are related to causing these? So you have to know the business. You have to know, you know, the environment to know how these things are impacted, and whether or not you should be reacting to or acting on information that's in front of you, such as a low cash day.
Yeah, like Mike said, he looked at certain reports before he, you know, opens his eyes. You know, the first thing I like to do is, you know, when I come in the mornings, I look at the number of accounts that were worked the day before, and I'll compare it to the day before that and to the same time last month. Then I'll look and do a query on accounts that have been in the system, you know, 1 to 8 days with zero attempts, because I'm looking for things that are falling through the cracks with, you know, missing the work effort, so to speak, or, you know, getting built into our dialing strategies.
That makes sense. Excuse me. Are the data points that you've mentioned, are you sharing those with the entire office? Are those sort of more for your eyes only report, for your eyes only data, or is it a combination of both? You know, sort of what data points maybe do you consider sharing with an entire office on a daily or a regular basis?
Well, the financial goals, you know, number one, because, you know, every collector, every team, you know, the office has a daily financial goal, and, you know, we like to share that those were met, not met, you know, or, you know, did we exceed them? How much did we exceed them? And, the collectors every day, the agents get notice of, you know, what their time was the day before, time on system, how they spent their time, and, you know, opportunities for improvement, or, you know, did a good job here. And I think it's important that, you explain things to all of your staff, whether it's client services, compliance, you know, quality assurance, because all of these departments, you know, we're pretty much feeding the ops beast, and everybody needs to know what the goals are and how come, and did we meet those goals, and what can we do to meet those goals. Yeah, I think everybody needs to know everything. I like to share.
Yeah, we share everything with our staff as well.
Yeah, I think that's how you create an empowered workforce, right? If they feel like they're a part of a larger organization and what they're doing and how it drives results and why we do the things we do, I think what that does is that gives them that sense of inclusion, and I think that's very important for retention, as we previously talked about, but also in hitting those goals and hitting your numbers.
Yeah.
And to piggyback on that, they also sometimes the staff actually provides great suggestions that are executable.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to add for example, right?
You're both right.
You know, I'm going to ask you for an example, Mike, right? Of a time when a staff made a great suggestion.
It happens every day. There's all kinds of suggestions. These are the guys doing the work. No, seriously, they're the ones that are doing the work. So they're the ones that are offering suggestions on better ways in which to do the job, more efficient ways, you know, carving out certain part of the inventory that we probably shouldn't call that, you know, we're not catching. They're catching it because they're talking to them. So it gives us something that we can actually go and modify our campaigns, because certain things you don't have to call the same frequency as others.
Got it.
Yeah.
Talking about being transparent and sharing everything with the staff, what about clients? Do you take that same approach with your clients? Are you sharing as much data as they want to get, or as much data as you think they need? Is it more of a pick and choose? Does it depend on the client?
Need to know. It's a need to know.
Ditto.
Agreed.
Yeah, I don't like to throw.
Well, I guess the question is, how often do they need to know then?
Well, you know, sometimes our clients set the tone on how often they need to know, and you know, I'm an old school collector at heart, and I don't like to show my whole bag of tricks, you know, in the first hand, you know, because, you know, y'all, those of you who played poker with me, you know that my deck's got six aces, so.
The deck doesn't.
Mind me to never play poker with you.
We've got another question that came in from the audience. Can the panelists comment on metrics they use for determining client profitability?
Yes.
Wow.
And that's another area I'm glad that question came in, because I think sometimes one of the things that we often overlook, or we've been guilty of in the past, is the client profitability. You know, we got a new client. Hey, we got a new client. You know, new accounts in the system, and we're working them, and you know, we're not making any money. What's going on? And the client has all these expectations of things for us to do, and then got to go back and do a model and say, is this really, you know, what we want to do? And we're throwing all these resources here, and is this client a good fit for us? I know that was a lot to say.
Yeah, from my perspective, the first thing that I would recommend is understand what your overhead is per. We use it per collector, right? All that support work that goes in to feeding the operations beast, to use a previously used vernacular. You have to establish what those costs are and figure them out per head. And then you start in what I consider the direct costs associated with collecting a bill, right? The letters, the collector time, what you're paying your individual collectors, and then the fee that the client requires. And sometimes you have to make that adjustment, either, you know, who's working the business and get the, what I would consider the less expensive collector, but may not be as experienced and as productive. But I think you have to start with what's your overhead.
Yeah, and I agree with everything everyone's saying. And I think most of our softwares actually have a unit yield report that we can get from a client mm-hmm. level. But I think what's important is we always have to consider, it's not always up to operations to determine whether or not it's profitable, because some clients are tethered to other clients and they become loss leaders for something that's a greater importance and value to the company. So you have to be careful strategically how you draw the line on those things.
That's a good point.
Very good point.
Well done. Two good points. Another question came in from the audience. Other than the key operational and productivity metrics, are there any key compliance metrics you track daily? For example, such as consumer complaints.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, we track consumer complaints. Through speech analytics, we're making sure we're hitting certain key items, from making sure that, the mini Miranda is stated in the two-party disclosure and things like that. So, yeah, we track that every day.
And we have some processes that our lovely programmer wrote for us. So when new business is loaded, it gives us a report of accounts that came in that maybe didn't have a charge-off date or were missing a social security number and or date of birth or other pertinent information was missing. We also get a report on Massachusetts attempts and Massachusetts post dates. We still have some collectors who they might try to solicit a post date in Massachusetts or Rhode Island. So we get those types of reports that kind of help us stay in line and will point us in the right direction. And we just started dabbling into speech analytics. But what I see so far with that is it's phenomenal. I just got to get enough people to be able to understand the data and get the data out to the masses and make changes based on all this data.
Yeah. And I don't have anything really to add to what Mike and LaDonna have said, other than we do use speech analytics as well, and we do have a team of people that actually go out and look for opportunities to keep us compliant. But we do track complaints, and compliance is probably the biggest thing that's changed in the last 10 years in our industry, and I think everyone's really doing a great job of it.
Speaking of compliance, it's been a few weeks since the proposed debt collection rule came out, and I'm curious, was there anything in the proposed rule that you're now maybe more closely tracking that you weren't before, just to sort of get a sense for the impact that, if it becomes part of the final rule, it's going to have on your business? Or are there any other changes to the types of data points that you foresee making that will be important based on what's on the regulatory horizon?
Oh, throw that one to DiCarpio. What was that said on page 439 of the 538-page document? I think you recited that to us earlier.
If I did, it was purely by accident. I think it's premature for us to act on anything that came out on the proposal. So we'll probably have to, I'm sure everyone's doing the same thing and they're making sure that they're in line with what's in the proposal. But I think we've all been there anyway. I think the biggest thing that's probably going to be on the future is the clarity that it offered with multi-channel communications. We talked about it earlier. It's going to embrace that technology, whereas a lot of the regulations that we've had to abide by haven't done that very well. And so, creating new metrics, new standards for that type of communication, I think is going to be, for me, what I'm looking forward to in the future from when it comes out.
Yeah, we reviewed it, but not put any things in place.
Right. I was just curious, like, for example, the call caps, has anybody sort of looked at their data? Are they, and are they over or under the proposed call cap? And if they're under versus over, what kind of impact is it having on, on collection rates or contact rates or anything like that?
Well,
we've done some preliminary looks. but I mean, yeah, it's going to fundamentally change based on what I understand of the call caps they're proposing. But I mean, at this point, I mean, this probably is the first of 25 different versions by the time we get through this whole thing. Where it's going to end up is going to be the interesting thing.
Yeah, and call caps and calling strategies, you know, is a KPI that we should be measuring anyway. You know, how many dials does it take to get a complaint? You know, how many dials does it take to get somebody to call you back? You know, are you leaving voicemails or are you not leaving voicemails? You know, what's the best for your shop? You know, how many hangups? You know, we don't leave voicemail messages. So if I call your cell phone, you know, 79 times, what's it going to take? Is it going to be dial 83 for you to call me back? So those are measures that things that should be measured anyway.
From my perspective, we're already conservative as it relates to those things. So it doesn't really modify anything at all for me.
Yeah.
So, you know, like LaDonna's example, I know she's being extreme, but those 79 calls, that 83rd connects, it's not going to be a pleasant conversation.
Exactly. You know, and I think that's when it comes down to your strategies and such, you know, just throwing things in a file and dial, you know, doesn't work. And that's why you do have to measure things like that.
Absolutely.
Another question came in complimenting the panelists on how helpful the information is. The question is, who on your team is monitoring this? It seems like a ton of data to be looking at. How do you find the time to look at it and then do something about it?
Delegation.
We're drowning in data.
It sounds like Mike DeCarpio is doing a lot of it in his sleep with his eyes closed, so maybe that's part of it too.
They're nightmares, man. They're just nightmares.
Well, I think from perspective,
yeah, go ahead.
From my perspective, you know, it depends on your level within the organization, right? A manager in charge of a team is going to look at certain key metrics as directed by senior level, right? I mean, I don't want them looking at, you know, too much detail because I want them on the floor working with the team, improving the metrics rather than diving into them. So really it's a cascading effect through the organization, and it kind of rolls downhill based on what senior management's looking at and where they want them to focus their efforts. So I think it depends on your level of the organization and what you're looking at from either strategic or tactical, depending upon your level.
Yeah,
that was so much better than delegation.
Yeah. They have analytics people that you know, put reports out daily, and it's getting people to digest that information. Like our dialer manager is very helpful, you know, with dialing strategies and results that they're seeing from our dialing resource. And the frontline supervisors are very helpful. And, you know, it pretty much takes every department to bring it all together, you know, so that everybody can understand it. One person.
Well, to steal that term that was used before, you know, you can sort of, you know, bring an onset of analysis paralysis if you're just spending all day looking at your data and not necessarily doing anything or doing all the other stuff you're supposed to be doing. So I think sort of how you manage that time and, you know, sort of delegate or determine or prioritize and triage, I think is a very important aspect to putting these, you know, making the changes that need to be made based on the data that you're reading.
Yeah, to piggyback on what you were saying there, I think actionable and achievable are two key ingredients to make sure that what you are looking at in terms of the data is putting you in the right path. So make sure you can take action that's achievable and that has a positive result.
Because another question.
You can't act on everything.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, because you can't act on everything.
Right. Another question came in. SMS is now by far the most effective form of first contact in our agency. I would be interested to know if the panel are seeing the same results. Anybody?
I have no data on that. DeCarpio?
Same.
Yeah, I don't have any data on that either. Again, we're not doing that currently, but we're looking forward to moving in multi-channel environment.
Yes. Same
so
here. We're not doing it currently.
Got it. Okay. A question that was sent to me before the webinar started, and I wanted to get to, I would like to discuss right party contacts and how they appear to be down across the board. What are some practices being used and the frequency of them being used in terms of monitoring RPC rates and doing something about it? Of course, that could be a whole other webinar.
Well, I think that goes back to the basics, you know, looking at your data right now and where your RPC is coming from. You know, is it letters, an outbound dial, is it credit reporting? Then, you know, looking at when these RPCs are happening and just compounding on that, you know, based on the information that you already have. You know, we can't make people pick up the telephone, and, you know, opening up other communication channels is going to be a help. But, you know, until we get the regulatory support that we need to get into these, you know, other channels and, you know, and feel comfortable without having to look over our shoulder at everything we do, you know, we're going to have to make the best of the data that we do have.
Yeah, and I think the other aspect of that is that you know, you can't, like Madonna said, you can't control those things, but we know that they exist. What we can control is the quality of the of the product that we put out. And so maybe moving some of the resource away from trying to track RPCs and create RPCs where you can control the quality of the communication that you have from your staff. And then, you know, rearranging some of the resources so that you can, you know, redesign or reapproach or retrain people as necessary.
Yep, and that's a KPI. Good point. That's a KPI in itself. You know, how many contacts does it take? How many RPCs does it take on one account to get your money?
Yeah, and you know, what are the average payments per collector so that you can help them improve that?
Absolutely.
Well, and I will tell you from our perspective, one of the things that we've done to try to improve RPCs is more manual dials. We found that our RPC rate goes up. Now, granted, our total outbounds go down, but we do have a better contact rate through manually dialing as opposed to utilizing a dialer.
So question on that, Mike, are you targeting accounts that you've previously contacted and that's what you put on an RPC campaign?
Yes. Sometimes it's previous contact. Sometimes we also use a recovery score to help us drive manual dial. So the ones with the highest recovery score, we tend to manually dial.
Okay. Interesting.
Do y'all use local caller IDs? I mean, are you pulsing your toll-free number or local phone numbers or?
Well, you know what? You kind of stepped a little bit on a landmine here at Delta Outsource Group. We're having an internal debate through senior leadership on whether there's a value there or not.
Same thing here. I was hoping you guys could help me because, you know, I wear an ops hat and a compliance hat. And then, you know, I look at it from both sides of the fence and I'm like, I want to see the value that it's going to bring back, you know, without any risk.
Right.
And we use local. Smart mics had figured it out.
She said smart mics. That's you. That's your way of saying that wasn't meant directed at me.
No, that's a mic.
No, I think that's her way of saying you invited the wrong mics to the call.
We talked a little bit before about employee morale, and I'm curious, there are probably a lot of different subjectives. Data points, such as maybe employee morale, you know, compliments from debtors, things like that. Are there subjective data points that should be tracked along with all the objective ones we've been talking about? And if so, maybe talk about, you know, one or two of the ones that you're tracking or you'd like to track and how you're keeping track of them. So I can use track 19 times in the same sentence.
Well, you could track them, but then it's what are you going to do with it? You know, I'm a big, you know, fan of, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire. And, you know, yes, complaints and call scoring sometimes can be subjective. Like, you know, all four of us could listen to a call and, you know, come up with a different score because different things are important to us, you know, unless it's weighted. But some things need to be, you know, just data gathered and reviewed periodically. The subjective things anyway.
Yeah, it's hard to track something that's subjective because the subject can always change and it changes from person to person. So it's different. I mean, morale is a tough thing because it changes constantly. It changes whenever you introduce new people to the staff or you lose a key person from the staff. What's important from a managerial perspective today compared to where it was yesterday. So those things that are subjective, they're always in motion. And so it's very hard to track something that's constantly moving.
And moving targets, very difficult to track. I wanted to, sir, before we get to wrapping up our discussion today, Mike, I asked you this a little while ago, but I want to ask it to you again because I'm difficult. In terms of data points, you know, you mentioned strategic goals. The data points you should be tracking should align with the strategic goals. How do you sort of actually kind of go about that process of figuring that out? What data points should be of the most significant to somebody? How do you sort of filter through all of these different points and sort of say these are the three or four that matter most to my strategic goals, whatever that might be?
So you're constantly evaluating strengths and weaknesses, where you are, what you want to accomplish, and how far away from where you are that you actually exist. And so with that, what's the first step that you need to take? What's the step towards accomplishing that goal? And so those are the data points that you want to track. You know, granted, there's a multitude of data points between where you are and where you want to be, but tracking like the furthest point doesn't do you any good because then you're just tracking a mark that's not going to be moving that much. So you want to kind of stage it to where, you know, what's the first step that I need to do to get me from point A to point B? And those are the data elements that you want to track within that. And then you constantly reevaluate, and then you constantly create new waypoints along the path. I mean, if you were looking for something, I don't know if you're looking for something more specific.
No, that's fine. Does anyone want to agree or disagree with Mike?
Mike's right.
Yes, I am. Excellent. Well, we've only got a few minutes left, but before we wrap up, what I'd like to do is something I've been doing for a while now is go around the panel and give each of our esteemed panelists a chance to share any parting words of wisdom, any key takeaways, anything they didn't get a chance to talk about but wanted to maybe mention because they thought it was important and we just didn't get to it today. But just to sort of offer any last words of wisdom before we all depart and go back to our the rest of the workday. If you don't mind, we'll go one by one at a time. Mike DiCarpio, you can go first.
Oh, no, please. Let LaDonna go first. Ladies first.
Yeah, okay. I'll remind you of that one. Just if you can measure it, you can manage it. And, you know, just have a solid process, you know, for measuring your KPIs, you know, looking for doing a gap analysis, you know, looking at ways to close those gaps and, you know, implementing action plans to improve.
Okay, excellent. Michael Logis.
Don't try to boil the ocean when it comes to KPIs. Pick three or four key ones that you want to focus on,
and they can change
quarterly, halfway through the year or year end. But don't get lost in the data that you analysis through paralysis. And then the last thing I have to say is go Blues.
I like
you're
go
not
boil the ocean. I'm not a Bruins fan, but. I'm happy there's a hockey fan on the webinar. There's not enough of those going around. Mike DiCarpio, you get the last word.
All right. And those two made some excellent points. The only thing that I would suggest, and I'm sure that there's different levels of management that are on the phone listening. Everyone has fantastic ideas, and sometimes ideas aren't supported by time, but doesn't mean it's a bad idea. But utilize the key indicators for your argument to support your ideas as you present them to your superiors.
Say what?
Excellent.
Oh, I love this group.
I do too. Before I let everybody go, I want to thank LaDonna, Mike, and Michael one last time for their insights and the comic relief today. Really appreciate them taking the time to share with us and really sort of, you know, even though we were joking around a lot, to take this seriously and to reach out and be very transparent about, you know, information that they're tracking on a regular basis and sharing it with everybody for no other reason than they want to help. So that was really nice of them. Thank you very much. Also want to thank TCN one last time for sponsoring today's webinar. Please go to www.tcn.com to learn more about the company. Thanks to everybody who participated and asked questions. A final reminder to participate in the feedback survey when you get that. And please feel free to shoot out any ideas for future webinars you'd like to see or like to hear, I guess. Thanks to everybody for listening. And again, panel, one last time, thank you very much. You guys were awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. And I appreciate everything that Accounts Recovery does for us.
Awesome. Well, excellent. Well, everybody enjoy the rest of their day, and we'll be back soon. Take care.
Bye.